we've been chatting, opening the door on the conversation around food addiction the last time or two that we've been on air. And Justin from Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous, surely there's a shorter acronym than that, has decided to join us. G'day, Justin. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much.
What is the acronym? It's just, what is it?
It's Food Addicts.
Food Addicts.
Yeah. We call it FA.
FA. Well, that's a multi-purpose acronym, that one, isn't it? Hey, mate, thanks for joining us. So are there a lot of similarities, or is it almost completely identical, the addiction with food versus drugs versus alcohol? Is it pretty much a parallel, just a different substance?
I sit here listening to the guys talk about addictions and just nodding my head the whole time. It's exactly the same.
Mm.
The biggest challenge for someone like myself is that I have to consume my drug of choice many times a day.
What's the same though, Justin? Like, what do you mean the same? So obviously it's different because you're not taking an illicit substance or drinking alcohol or something like that. But what is it that's the same?
It's the vicious cycle for myself.
Yeah.
Where I have fit out insecurities, self-loathing, all those negative thoughts that I found food took them away instantaneously.
Yeah.
It gave me a hit.
Okay.
And it made me feel better in that moment. And the challenge was that I so desperately wanted to look good and feel good, and food just wasn't doing it for me.
Okay, wasn't doing it for you. And so it sounds like you're talking about that, like when you say that hit, you know, I'm hearing, Gav, you know, like the dopamine hit in the brain, you know, which is what we get. I mean, that's what a gambler gets when they gamble. You don't have to take a substance to get that addictive cycle happening and to get that hit that you're talking about. Mm. And I know that food can do that for me too, you know, and I'm a person that, I mean, Craig knows. I mean, me and Craig train together in the gym, you know, most days of the week.
Mm.
And you know, I try to be fairly careful with my food as well, because I know that once I open a certain door, and Craig's talked about opening a certain door with food as well, that I just get that hit, and it just sets off for me. It sets off that mental obsession where I'm constantly kind of fighting it in my mind. Oh no, don't do that. You can't do that. This is, you know, it just goes on and on and on. And then you have something to eat and it sets off that beautiful, mm-hmm. relief feeling. It's, for me, it's like escape from my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But is that...
And for myself, my story is one of absolute emotional eating. And I didn't even... there was even no consciousness around it. I just knew inside, intuitively, I wasn't feeling right. And I knew exactly the way to deal with that.
Yeah.
But combined with a physical craving. So when I started eating certain foods,
yeah,
couldn't put it down.
Wow.
That's so interesting. I'm so interested in... And it's probably my lack of knowledge in this area, and it's not a common thing that we have in our program. We don't get a lot of people that come in to deal with their treatment and so forth. But as in you, I said about your weight before, and whether it was an overeating situation or an undereating situation, and you said it wasn't. You're sort of about a 7 kilo buffer of where your weight was. Can you explain a little bit about that for you?
Yeah, I was actually 25 kilo heavier than what I am now. And I've been in recovery for almost 7 years now, and my weight has stayed within probably a 2 kilo range for the last six and a half years. Once I got down to my goal weight, and now I just leave it in my hand of, we have sponsors as well, leave in the hand of my sponsor to manage that weight and to control that. But I, at the moment, I'm totally neutral around the food that I eat. I know what's right, what quantities are right. I get the right amount of nutrition. I do the same exercise that I've done for the last 20 years. So I know it's not an exercise thing. It's what I put into my body.
Can I just ask, is, because I know with addiction, like with other substances, a lot of what we do in terms of, and this, I'm not sure if this is going to be part of the differences or not, but I know in terms of alcoholism and drug addiction, there's very little thought that we put into it in terms of, like, yes, we stay away from the old environment and we, you know, we're careful not to, to put a drug into our body, but for the recovery in other substances in to do with addiction is really about the psychological and the mental state. And for me, that seems to be what you're saying. Like, instead of it being about, well, what weight am I and what's actually, you know, Well, it's not just what weight you are, it's what's happening psychologically and emotionally. And the recovery kind of lives in there. Does that sound right?
Totally. So for us, we're dealing with the physical, the mental, and the spiritual component. That's what we do.
Yeah.
And we have to eat, but we have to rigorously work a program around. It's not a diet.
Yeah.
It's like the first thing from a diet you possibly have. And we deal with all those three levels, and it's rigorous.
We're chatting with Justin from Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous. Is there any joy in eating for you these days, mate? Like, do you get excited about lunch? Do you go, this is freaking awesome.
In reality, Craig...
Oh, my God, get out of my way.
Well, it's interesting because when I am having a tough day, I had a tough day today.
Yeah.
I was really looking forward to lunch.
Right.
And I really enjoyed my lunch. I really felt it.
Yeah.
It was quite a challenging day today. But by and large, my meals...
Yep.
I don't enjoy necessarily. I just know it's for sustenance, and that's the way I treat it. That's the way I'm encouraged to treat it. There's no ceremony around it. The foods we eat are like we get all the right food groups, but it's just about the nutrition.
Do you think you can be a food addict and still look for, and still be in control and still manage your addiction while enjoying your meals?
Personally,
yep.
I need the rigor of the program that I work. I've tried it. I've tried to have control it myself and have the ceremony and the enjoyment, and it just never worked for me.
It's almost like saying, let's control, you and I, Mick, let's go and control drink. Like, I'm not enjoying that. I don't want to have a couple and then put it down and then live a few days and have I'm on it.
Yeah, I get it.
And then it's the routine of everything else that comes along.
I get both sides, I get it, but I'm going, oh, what a pity. Like, mate, come and have a burger with me. And we won't have any cheese or the bun. But I get it. I completely get it. But
if you drank beer, perhaps, and you went to the pub with Mick and had a can of meal and you had a beer, would you think that for Mick? Would you say, oh, shit?
No. Just because I understand.
He's a lunatic when he's sober. He doesn't need a grog in him.
I understand what Justin's saying as well. What about, have you heard of a thing called exercise nervosa?
No.
Or it's basically exercise obsession. And it's sometimes called athletic nervosa, and also a lot of people who have body dysmorphia or eating disorders or eating addiction, I would suggest, basically have an uncontrolled exercise habit where it ties in with their food and the whole, you know, lack of self-esteem and self-worth and striving for this and that and some, you know, emotional and or perhaps spiritual gap or whatever. But, yeah, there's a lot of, I won't say a lot, there's some research being done now in that space where, just like with food, just like with drugs, just like with alcohol, we're seeing people who exercise in secret, exercise obsessively. They lie about when they climb out of the window at 1 a.m. in the morning. They go running until 3 or 4. They come back in, right? They exercise obsessively in their room. They hide the food that they're given so they don't have to eat it. Manipulative, controlling, deceitful, just like a normal addict.
Mm. We have, again, some of our members would share that exact same experience.
Mm.
And again, has come back to try and manage their weight and the way they look. And food was one part and the exercise they thought was the other. And they did some serious damage to their bodies. They jeopardized unborn babies. They did all sorts of things for that exact same, I guess, syndrome.
Yeah. I had that. I don't know if I ever shared this with you two guys, but it's in my first book. I had, and this is a revelation for you, Adam. Sorry, Justin. I'll try and be brief. I had, when I was a fat kid, right, and I became a non-fat kid, I started running, and I ran obsessively, and I lost 30 kilos, right? I went from 90 kilos to 60 kilos when I was 14. And what happens when that happens is all of a sudden you stop being socially invisible. You start being, I didn't get picked last for every sporting team. Mm. And with the weight loss, I started to do a lot of body weight stuff, so push-ups and chins. And I just started to go from being not an athlete to an okay athlete, right? And then all of this stuff happens where you're getting recognized, blah, blah, blah. And in my mind, the connection was, well, this is all about my body, which it kind of was, right? So all of a sudden, I'm not socially invisible. All of a sudden, I'm no Brad Pitt, but I've got a girlfriend now, and right?
Yeah.
And then one day I was playing footy and I demolished my ankle, right? I had a really, really bad, what was it? It was a medial tear, right?
Yep.
So I couldn't even walk, right? I couldn't walk, let alone run. And I ran every single day of my life. That was my obsession. I went to the doctor, this quick version, and he goes, you can't run. You've got to use crutches for 4 weeks, and then it's going to be another 4 weeks, and you won't run at all for probably 8 to 10, right? So that devastated me. Got home the first night with my crutches, climbed out of the window, right? When mum and dad were in bed, tried to run. I couldn't run. Of course I couldn't. Got out the next night, tried to do the exact same thing. And I discovered that if I ran, right near my house was a new housing estate with just roads and gutters. If I ran with my foot at the right angle in the gutter, so with my foot turned, out on the side, so supinated, not pronated, it was about a 3 out of 10 pain, not an 11 out of 10 pain. So I ran at night. Out the window, I ran for about a month with my foot in
the
gutter.
You're a sick man.
That's addiction.
That's crazy.
That's exactly, I was.
That's a complete obsession. Yeah.
And then the same thing, you know, went into bodybuilding. When I started bodybuilding when I was just young, I was, because I was an insecure lunatic,
yep.
And all I wanted was approval, and I wanted to be an alpha male, and I wanted, you know, because I was just an insecure only child idiot, I did a whole bunch of stupid stuff.
So essentially the whole thing is about emotions. It's about the way we feel. And you know what? It's the same with any addiction, like you're saying. And it does all come down to that, you know. Like we can sort of, you know what, you can go to another level and go, yeah, but it's about how I look and it's about my image and it's about this and that. And it is, but it's only about that so that you can treat your feelings. And it always comes back to that emotional state. Every addict on the face of the planet, I don't care who they are, whether it's, you know, a footballing superstar like Gavin Krasiska, or, you know, hardcore junkie like Mick Hall, just a bum.
Or an ex-fat kid from Maui.
Or an ex-fat kid from Maui. Or the, you know, a guy that's part of Food Addicts sitting next to me. It's all about the way we feel.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, Justin will stick around. We're going to get rid of him, but he's going okay. So we'll keep him on for another break and see how he goes. Welcome back to Melbourne's Home of Sport, the right time, the first Monday of every month between 9 and 10. Mark Fine here. We'll be back after 10, of course he will. Now, Mick Hall, I'm going to slide this one to you.
Righto.
I've been self-medicating with alcohol for years.
Have you, Craig?
For my anxiety. Leave the funny stuff to me, champ. Okay. And I've finally got treatment. It's working, but I still have a drinking habit. So he's been self-medicating with alcohol for anxiety. Any ideas on how I can trust the meds and not rely on alcohol for his anxiety, or his or her? I don't know if it's
that's a real tricky one, Craig. So if someone's been through treatment, but they're, just read that to me again, Craig.
I've been self-medicating with alcohol for years, for my anxiety, and have got it, okay. And have finally got treatment. It's working, but I still have the drinking habit.
So he's on meds, but he's still drinking.
Okay, so what it sounds like the treatment is he's had is the treatment for anxiety rather than the treatment for alcoholism or for drinking or for anything else. So what I can tell you is that any type of depression or anxiety disorder or anything like that, we need to deal with the drinking first. So we can't put the... We can't put the cart before the horse. We can't treat the anxiety and then keep up the drinking. We've got to cut the drinking out first. Then we can effectively treat the anxiety. And it's got to go in that order. And it's the same with, you know, with most mental illnesses. If somebody's using illicit substances or drugs or alcohol or whatever it might be, and they're in that addictive pattern, we cannot effectively treat that mental illness until the drugs and the alcohol are down and put away. Then we can effectively treat. If you can imagine, you know, when someone's suffering from anxiety and a normal medication for somebody that's suffering anxiety is some type of benzodiazepine, which is Valium, Xanax.
Addictive drugs.
Very, very addictive, but also stuff that's very, very closely related to alcohol. And then that person has that, but then they drink on top of it. Okay, we're going to end up with a pretty messy situation. And we're going to end up with a person that has residual effects. So most of the anti-anxiety medications have what we call a half-life, which means that they last quite a long time and they can build up. And then when you're tipping alcohol on top of it, we're left with a pretty messy situation. So my advice is to get some help to stop the drinking. Then let's re-look at the anxiety.
Just quickly, Gav. Hi, Gavin. Just wondering, with your addiction, was it long after you finished up playing footy? There's quite a few questions. How did you build up the strength and willpower to beat it once and for all? Once you beat it, did you then decide you want to help others, or have you always enjoyed that?
Well, just quickly, I was I was addicted to cannabis from the age of 15. Alcohol all through my footy career. So they were the two drugs of choices that I had while I was playing, and I was able to manage my and function through my footy career with those two. And then on retirement, I moved on to my drug of choice, or what was to be my drug of choice, which is amphetamines. And over the next 12 years, I basically, my life came to a halt. In terms of willpower, it didn't have anything to do with willpower for me. It had a lot to do with my wife's, a little bit of love that she had left for me to basically show me the way into a treatment service. And then, do you know what I did? I just did what I was told. I was just sick of living the way I was living. I was petrified of the possibility of having to live differently, and to say to not drink or drug in any given day, I would have thought you were crazy. But I was so broken. I walked in and yeah, I just did what I was told, and I spent 4 months in treatment and learned about myself. And then after I got about 9 to 10 months clean time up, I decided to do a bit of education in this field to utilize my profile to be able to help others.
Good work, mate. Love it. Justin from Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous is here with us. How does one ascertain whether or not he or she has a problem with food, perhaps categorising them as an addict?
Yeah, there's probably a number of ways. I think one of them we've spoken about before is that you eat to feel better about yourself. So it's a real emotional state. You're noticing that. People who obsess about their weight constantly, so they may weigh themselves multiple times a day, absolutely obsess about the way they look, the way they weigh. People who binge and purge, so we have a lot of people who will actually do that significantly. Again, eating when you're not hungry, eating at any time.
My God.
Yeah.
Gav's just realised
he's ticking all these boxes.
Yeah. I hope you're not ticking the purging box.
No, not that
Gavin,
one.
Gavin, get out of the corner.
Yeah. So, and again, it's also about people who have tried to diet multiple times, get on exercise regimes multiple times, and just have failed, succeeded instantaneously, but over time failed time and time again.
Now, just quickly, while we're on a roll with you, how can people get in contact with you? And I know you've got an information day coming up soon. Give that a plug.
Yeah, so we've got a website, which is foodaddicts.org. And we have our information session on Saturday from 10:15 to 11:45 in Windsor. People can call a number. The number is 85942282. And we deal with everything very much anonymously and confidentially.
We'll leave those details with Carl, our producer. So if you didn't get that, you can just give a call on the station number and Carl will give those details to you as well. Mate, it's been great. Thanks for coming and having a chat with us.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Very interesting.
Thanks for your support.
You're doing some good work, and thanks for sharing some insight with us, and hopefully we get a few people along. I think I need to get along there. I think you'll see me and Gav there just wearing a rubber nose and a moustache in the corner.
I'll just be whipping through McDonald's drive-thru. Good on you guys.
Thanks, Justin. Good on you, mate. We'll go to a break. When we come back, we'll wind up. Welcome back to Melbourne's Home of Sports. Gavin Krasiska, Mick Hall, myself, Craig Harper. Finally, we'll be back very soon. Just another quick plug. I'm in a plugging mood. A friend of mine, Andrew Jobling, who also used to be my business partner, also played for St Kilda Footy Club, is something of a prolific author these days. He's written a book called Kicking On, which is out and meant to be very good. Kicking On, you can go to Andrew Jobling. .com.au, or one word, andrewjobling.com.au, and you can also go to Amazon and Booktopia to have a look at that. Now, Gavin Krasiska and Mick Hall, hi guys, I pick up my 90-day clean tag tomorrow at NA. I just want to give it a huge plug. I was a daily amphetamine meth user for 18 years and couldn't do it on my own no matter what. Great show from Plough in Perth. We've got people right across our vast land. I want to ask you two something. My mum just... Gav doesn't know this, but you know this. So my mum got diagnosed 8 weeks ago with two lots of cancer. bowel cancer and lung cancer, and she's since had two major operations. She's had a 2/3 of one lung removed and a fair bit of bowel removed and all of those things. But the relevant part of this is that what happens after you have two major surgeries, you get prescribed heaps of drugs.
Oh, yeah.
Heaps of drugs. And, I mean, she was in intensive care for 8 days after the lung operation, and the stuff that she was just...
Bet you lots of endone.
High as a kite, right? Mm. But it's now, what is it? It's maybe 5 or 6 weeks post-op from her last op. And, I mean, she's fine. But, yeah, endone and another one.
Oxycontin?
Yeah, no, not... but anyway...
Tramadol?
It might have been. Or fentanyl. Oh, no. Ooh. No, that's the one. Anyway, the drug that she was on or is on still, I looked it up. 1 in 2 people that get prescribed it get addicted to it.
Yeah.
1 in 2.
Yeah, it's massive. It's massive.
Why are they prescribing that? If 50% of the people that get... surely there's a better avenue than that.
I had to have a bit of a chat to one of the doctors, a surgery that we utilised for Dayhab. So one of my clients was taken there with some back pain today and was prescribed Endone. And we had to have a little chat to the doctor surgery and say, you know what, thanks for your help, but no thanks. It is given out like Smarties, this stuff. It is a massive... In the States...
The doctor obviously knows he's treating an addict.
Yep. In the States, this prescription pain medication is a massive issue, and it is in Australia. Make no mistake, it is in Australia as well. This stuff is getting handed out like lollipops. And I'm getting a bit passionate about it because I tell you what, it is just absolutely ridiculous.
It's justified as being okay because the doc gave it to me.
That's right.
It's ridiculous. So I had to have a chat. I mean, she's fine, but I had to have the... And she's like, yeah. I go, no, Mum, don't yeah me. Listen to me. Yeah. Tell me what you're taking. And like she's... So we've planned the exit strategy. Off. Because I don't need a 77-year-old addict in the family.
No, but I mean, 5 or 6 weeks on, what I can tell you is it 100% she's going to go through withdrawal.
Yeah.
And it isn't going to be nice.
Off the SMS, we're talking with Mick Hall and Gavin Krasiska. I'm 43, ran 4 half marathons in the last 18 months. We were talking about exercise addiction a little moment ago. I injured my Achilles in April, gained 6 kilos since, but finding mojo again now. It's all about mindset for me. I'm out for a walk. Maybe I should start running along the gutters.
I like that.
That is funny, Daz. That is
an absolute ripper.
So how can people who get, you know, pain medication for normal, you know, I've stuffed my back, I've stuffed my neck or my knee or whatever.
Yep.
What are the caveats? What are the precautions?
Well, look, I mean, the first thing is, I mean...
Take as prescribed.
Yeah, take as prescribed. But the first thing is to try all other avenues before you go really heavy painkillers. Like the heavy painkillers should be the absolute last option or they're really the only option.
Mm.
You know, like there's lots of different medications and different strength medications. I mean, you know, one to start with is something like Panadeine Forte or something like that, which has a very... It's not a massive amount, but it's a decent enough amount of codeine, you know, which is still not great, but it's better than Endone or OxyContin. Although, Endone and OxyContin are much stronger. Some people need to take this medication, but they need to take it as prescribed and not take it for a long time. It's not a long term answer.
When I stuffed my back last year, I got prescribed this thing called Lyrica.
Yes,
it made me stupid.
Yes,
it lowered my IQ by about. No.
It's not your excuse?
I know I'm not a genius anyway. That's all right, Einstein.
Is that a box of Lyrica sitting on the bench there, Craig?
Listen, steady on. But I couldn't think. I remember one day when I was taking Lyrica, I went shopping, I was looking at a mandarin, I couldn't think of the name of it. I'm like, what are those things called? I'm like, what is going on with my head? Like, I communicate and write and think for a living. I'm like, I've got a whatever this is. And I just stopped.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Is that... I'm going to talk to
probably
you, Gav.
Very common.
I'm going to talk to you, Gav, because he's an idiot. Is that not just that, but, you know, apart from being addictive, can it do a lot of other, wreak lots a lot of like cognitive
of
function.
Lots of different types of medications can affect different people differently. So it is probably very common, but I'm not quite sure if you should be taking any of those sorts of drugs with your background and what that story you told me about before.
Yeah,
my God, but you're... Yeah. As a kid, that's you're one of us, mate. I think I am
an addict.
Classic.
I actually think I'm an addict that's just hidden it for 50 years because I have. It's like I've never drunk, but I reckon if I drank, I'd be an alcoholic. Yeah. And I've never gambled, but I reckon because I love that euphoria.
Yeah.
And when I got into anything, when I got into bodybuilding, I wanted to be Mr. World in about 6 months.
More.
When I used to run, I ran obsessively, and I ran 365 days of the year. And I couldn't have a day off.
Well, yeah. Lucky bugger.
We've just confirmed I'm an addict.
We've just confirmed
ticked all the boxes.
Craig at Dayhead. We've just confirmed a bit.
Give your respective businesses a plug and go.
Sober Living Housing. You can call me directly on 97581746.
Dayhab the Rehab, dayhab.com.au, or just ring 1-800-329-422.
And you'll speak to Mick directly.
You will, sometimes. Most likely.
Fantastic. Big thanks, of course, to Justin from Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous.
That was really interesting.
Yeah, it was. It was very good indeed. It's good to chat to him because now I recognise that I am, in fact, an addict. So I feel right at home here. Stephen J. Peake has just walked in the building, the big man carrying.
Look at him.
I've never seen anyone that brings more crap. He's always just got a big pile of stuff under his arm.
Where's the food?
Every time I see him, he's lost 8 kilos. He should be minus 300 kilos by now. Finally, he'll be in after 10. Stephen J. Peake will be in after 10. I will be back next Monday, and the boys will be back next month. Enjoy your night, folks.